Hello and welcome to another edition of The More Show, which is sponsored by the UFO Matrix magazine. On today's show, my guests include Michael and Sarah Feely, authors of Walking to the Light, The Journey of a Lightworker Duo. Michael and Sarah have both witnessed ghosts, poltergeist activity, UFOs, out-of-body experiences, angels, energy, meditation, and much, much more. So without further ado, Michael and Sarah, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello, thank you.
Now, just tell us a bit about yourselves to begin with, both of you.
Well, Sarah and I met in 2005 when we were both frontline police officers in Birmingham, here in the UK. We ended up on the same shift and we began to work quite a long time together, and everything blossomed from there.
What was your life like before you started your work on your books?
Before we started work on our books, after we got together as a couple, things started to take off. We started to have all kinds of experiences of a spiritual and supernatural nature. I, through my life, have had various experiences, but nothing like I'd had when me and Michael got together. Something triggered and something happened when that occurred.
So what would you say happened then, Sarah?
I think there's a deep connection between myself and Michael, and we would go as far as to say that we are soulmates, and even further again to say that we are twin flames, which is a very, very closely connected couple of souls. And we feel that we've got a sort of a mission, almost, if you like, to
basically just let people know what we're about.
Yeah, let people know what we're about, and it seemed to be triggered as we got together.
When you say to tell people about your message and sort of to give them a deeper understanding of how your life has changed and the way that can impact theirs, would you say then, Michael, that you really wasn't as spiritual before you met Sarah prior to 2006?
Yeah, not spiritual. Always open-minded. Always open-minded to the fact that there must be so much more to existence than this.
So basically then, when you both met, then you knew that there was a greater reality than this, all sorts of events started to take place, which we'll get into. But I just want to go to you, Sarah, as well. You did have events taking place in your childhood that sort of fired something in yourself with the spirituality. Could you just explain that?
Yeah, from an early age we became aware of the spirit of a girl named Sarah Jensen that seemed to inhabit our house where we lived. When children would come round to the house, they would always see her. She would start to play with them. And one day, my little brother, who was three at the time, stated to me that he could see this girl, and that he named her as Sarah Jensen. He said she looked a lot like me, and that she was standing over by a wardrobe. When my mum came into the room, I told her what was happening. He was saying the same things to her. She was a little bit freaked out by it, and he kept saying that she's moved now because you've stood by her, and now she's in the mirror, and it seemed to be some kind of little game that was going on between the two of them, but neither myself or my mum could actually see this girl. And this blossomed into a whole story. Later on, many more people saw the girl, and then when I went to see a medium, or when we went to see a medium, she explained to us that we had an energy around us, and it was the Sarah Jensen girl. She said that this girl needed help. She felt safe around us as we were police officers, and she wanted us to look into her death. And obviously, being police officers at the time, we thought, yeah, okay, we can help this girl. We can find out what's happened to her. And we were told that basically she'd been taken by another's hand, which meant she'd been murdered. So we went off on this little mission to find out what had happened to this girl and to see if we could help her.
Okay, and where did this lead you then, Michael?
Well, this led to strange things happening in the house. We had windows smashing, we had pictures falling off the wall and landing face down on the carpet. There was always sort of a strange energy around us. We were always feeling very, very drained and negative and irritable. And it felt like somebody was basically just feeding off our energy. We were just winding down like a flat battery.
Okay, so from your childhood, Sarah, this spirit girl had then, you know, come into the, you know, was still with you now, and had sort of taken an effect on, you know, you two as a couple then.
Yeah, she. We were told that she basically attached herself to me, and therefore both of us, because we were together all the time. And being a spirit attachment, obviously being either stuck or having chosen to stay on this earth plane, she needed a source of energy to be able to keep existing here. And the way that spirit attachments will do that is to feed off your energy and drain your energy and create situations and scenarios that they can withdraw that energy. So we had this going on around us, and things got quite tough at one point because it really was taking its toll on us.
So do you think a lot of people could suffer from spirit attachment and they don't know?
I think they do. I think that there's more spirits on this plane than there are human beings. And if people suddenly have an argument with a loved one and they can't understand why, suddenly they go into a mood and again they can't understand why, just give some thought that it may well be a spirit attachment.
So do you think a lot of famous people might have spirit attachments? Do you think there might be, energies from certain people that have amazing, challenging lives, for example? Do you think that there could be some spiritual attachment issues there?
I've certainly read about stories where, you know, with famous actors and people that have been haunted by previous famous actors that used to be on the set and that hang around because they don't want to let go of that lifestyle, so they're kind of living it out through the people that are still alive. So yeah, I've no doubt whatsoever that they probably do have spirit attachments, and it probably is quite a problem in some instances.
Now, tell me a bit more about this young girl's story, this sort of, you know, key event in both your lives that shaped you going on this course and, you know, sort of, you know, encouraging your support for what you're about to do. I suppose, what was the key thing that happened next then? How did you get rid of this little girl? Well, not get rid of it, that's the wrong word, but how did you help her to cross over?
Well, we'd seen this medium lady. She told us that if we ever needed her help again with Sarah, if anything started to go wrong, then she would be there for us. We went to look into all the deaths that we could find that had occurred in the area from the year 1960 to the present day to see if we could find anything on this girl, and we couldn't find a trace. Little did we realise that we were going back to Victorian times with this girl, so we would never have found her anyway. And then one day, when we decided that we'd done enough, as much as we could to help her, and that we sort of reached a dead end, we decided that we needed to get back in touch with the medium and ask her to come over and send this girl into the light. We spoke about this over dinner, but after making that decision, we came home, and as we entered the house, the whole atmosphere of the place changed. You could feel it was just cold. It was very spooky. We could feel that Sarah Jensen wasn't happy about what we'd talked about. And things started to happen. Mick actually started to feel as if he'd been possessed, and he fought that off. The radiator would switch itself off, the room would go freezing cold, and then on the evening we smelt flowers, which were really, really nice smelling flowers, but the fact that it was wafting across our living room from out of nowhere was enough to make us leave for the night. We'd spoken to the medium just prior to that, agreed that she was going to come round the next morning and help us. And with that, we basically packed our bags and went to my mum's house for the night because she was aware of the Sarah Jensen story.
So what's happened to Sarah Jensen now? What did the medium do to sort of help her move on? And where does she move on to?
Well, what happened next was we both woke up at 3:30 that morning. We didn't know at the time, but we subsequently found out that we're actually reliving her murder, reliving her last moments. But I can't remember screaming. Sarah remembers me screaming, but Sarah can't remember herself screaming, yet I can. It's almost like it was happening on another dimension for us. After we'd relived her murder, we got up and basically spent from half past 3 in the morning till 7 in the morning, went for family to awake. As soon as family awoke, we had breakfast. We went to get the medium, but as we were about to get in the car, the medium texted Sarah and said, "I'm sorry, I can't make it, blah, blah, blah." So I got straight on the phone to her and said, you know, things have sort of upped the ante and we desperately need help. To my surprise, she did actually answer the phone. So we continued and picked her up from her own house, but she did tell us that on the morning her washing machine had lifted off the ground when it wasn't actually plugged in. she told us that she'd had a cup of coffee in the kitchen, and when she went to drink from it, it had actually moved into the living room and had a silver spoon stuck in it. And she basically, even though she deals with spirits every day as part of her life, she was scared. She didn't even want to be in her own house, which was for her a rarity. So we all went back to our house, and she said that Sarah Jensen didn't want to pass through to the light until she told her story, because her stepfather had sort of covered it up, and she wanted her story heard before she'd go on.
So, yes, she had suffered abuse from the stepfather, that was what it was, and obviously the death as well. He accidentally killed her, is that right?
Yeah, she was victim of abuse by her stepfather. It had been going on for quite a while. Apparently her mother knew about the abuse but never did anything about it. And then on that particular night, at about 3:20 in the morning, the time that we woke up screaming, was the time that he'd entered her bedroom and taken the abuse a step further, which we took to mean that he'd sexually abused her. While she was screaming and trying to fight out against him, he put his hand over her mouth and smothered her and basically suffocated her. Apparently he didn't actually mean to kill her, but nevertheless that's what happened.
And that's 159 years that's taken or more to resolve.
Yeah, it's been quite a long time, yes.
Okay. So this is what led you to sort of, on top of all the other experiences you had, to write your first book, Walk Into the Light. So would you say that's right?
Yeah, it was a short while afterwards. I mean, we'd had several experiences also prior to that, but this was the major awakening in our life, and things just seemed to follow on from there. And it did take a little while to actually get over. It was a bit of a journey for us, a bit of a battle, because we were quite scarred by what had happened. But as we came through that period, then came the book, and then came many more experiences with that.
It must have been quite hard for you to sort of leave the force, though, to leave the police force. I mean, that wasn't an easy decision, was it, for you both?
It wasn't an easy decision. It's a decision that we'd been pondering over for a while, because we weren't happy at work as it was. You know, the politics of it all were sort of taking over what we were supposed to be doing. So we weren't happy. But as regards to, did we have anything else to go to? No, we didn't. So it wasn't going to be an easy, you know, move from one job to another. But when this happened, it just made us realise that there's so much more to life, and if you want something, you've got to go for it. If you're not happy with something, then you've got to change it, and you know, you're the only person that can do that. So we were kind of being guided down this road as well, and in the end we made a decision that we were going to leave, and that's what we did.
So how do you live your life now that's different to how you was living your life prior to working in the police force?
Pretty much we live the spiritual way. We wake up in the morning, live in the now, and we wake up happy, and we do as much as we can to let people know not to worry, this is an experience, and once you die, you only physically die, you move on to other realms, to other existences, to continue the soul journey.
Okay. And just to remind the audience again, how long have you been working on this for?
Probably the last 2 years of our life has been dedicated to this way.
Okay. So do you think by doing this, do you think it's also progressing yourself and enforcing your belief as well for everything that you've currently doing? I mean, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I think so. Because, I mean, as I said, with the experiences, it confirms to us that there is so much more going on. So with everything that happens to us, it just confirms. It confirms that where we're going and what we're doing is right for us, and that there's definitely more to it.
But how do you make money? How do you live by living this way? I mean, how are you surviving?
When you tend to go and work with, you know, spirit, they tend to guide you where you need to go. So, yes, we make money from the books. That's not the reason we wrote the books, but we do make money from the books. We also do talks. We work on the internet as well. So, you know, we're not millionaires or anything like that, but we've always got enough to sort of get us by and allow us to do this stuff comfortably.
But you don't have to be spiritual, do you, and to be broke?
No. I mean, you can. Life is what you make it. So, I mean, a lot of people do, spiritual people, tend not to have a lot of money. But then, you know, we have got things such as the law of attraction. If you need or want something in your life, you can bring it in. So money, you know, can be brought into your life if it needs to be.
Just depending what... Would you say it's not what you want, but what you say you already have?
I think it is. I think everybody has a certain amount of abundance anyway. I mean, the earth is a materialistic sort of realm, but the higher realms see abundance as service to others, And through that service to others, you can actually expand your own consciousness and develop.
Okay, but some would say, though, that it's, you know, put yourself first, you put others first. What would you say to that?
I do. I think everything starts from within. You know, charity begins at home, so to speak. But once you've actually worked on yourself and got yourself in a position to help others, then you concentrate on helping others. But yes, it does actually start with yourself first.
Yeah. So would you say, being spiritual, Sarah, would you say that you've become free?
Yeah, I mean, well, definitely more so than I was before, and you know, in a normal sort of job. You know, we get up every day now, as Michael says, and we're happy, and we just go with the flow, literally, and that tends to take us where we need to be, and each experience is a valuable one, and it's making us happy, so there's something going right there, isn't there?
Absolutely, and would you say then that, you know, there's a sort of realm of control going on in the world right now?
Yeah, this is something that we've looked into quite deeply, and you know, our research concludes that there is definitely something more going on in the world. You can trace it back a long time into ancient Babylon and Sumeria, and there are certain bloodlines that came out of those areas, those regions that expanded across the world. They took up positions of power in politics, banking, media, etc. And certain names come up time and time again in this within this kind of agenda. And so when you look into it, you realise that there is some kind of connection, and it always seems to be the same people coming up within that area.
But then, Michael, would you say then that being spiritual allows you to be free from this agenda?
We're all, to a certain extent, controlled by the agenda. You know, we all have to pay taxes, we all have to comply to laws that don't serve anyone. So there is an element of control in anyone's life, but when you become spiritual, when you realise that it's a game, then you can begin to play it.
With being spiritual then, does it mean that we need to change the system that we're living in? And if we change the system that we're living in, is your advice to change it too?
Well, my advice to change it too would be unity. Let's stop focusing on the so-called differences between us, because it's that is just divide and conquer. Become a unified force and start living for each other.
So you're talking there much more of a sort of bartering system, as in, you know, I'll do this, I'll fix your electrics if you fix my plumbing.
I think that would be a lot better system. I know people will sort of struggle with the concept of how that could work, but in a world of aplenty, why do we have people starving? You know, in a world of where the top few have everything, why do others have nothing? You know, it's hardly fair.
You know, I suppose those who are in the power aren't going to be happy to sort of give up their power, are they?
Well, definitely not. I mean, they've been in power now for so long that, you know, they're not going to give it up willy-nilly, and they're throwing everything at us at the moment to try and stop that from happening. There is an awakening going on. There are a lot more people now aware of what's going on and having their own experiences that they can't explain. They're realising that there's so much more to life than what we're being led to believe. And the system is trying to throw absolutely everything at us now to keep us down and to stop us from realising this connection.
Now, you both must think that there's a lot more to learn yet. And would you say that you're both always going to be learning?
Definitely. I mean, even the last couple of weeks, you know, we thought we'd got most of things sussed, but we realised that we've got a long way to go, and that, you know, we've learnt so much even just the last couple of weeks. So it's a never-ending journey, and even when we're up in the higher realms, I'm sure we'll still be carrying on that learning.
Do you think it's very important right now to sort of concentrate on this life, to concentrate on what's going on down here, rather than to be too bothered about where we go? But then again, I suppose it's important to ask these questions, because does it affect what we're doing now?
I think the first thing to realise is we are actually going somewhere else. This is not the only existence there is. We need to concentrate on this life now, because this is the current now. You know, there's a lot of opportunity to rectify karma, to do things that we did wrong, do them right this time, and to basically gel everything from previous lives and this one.
Okay, and you mentioned their previous lives. So just for the guests that don't know, or the audience that don't know too much about past lives, what are past lives, Sarah?
Well, most people that are here today have had past lives. They would have had many, many past lives. When we incarnate into a physical body, but the soul that is within that physical body is always the same. So if you go back in history, you'll find that people have had different lives as different people, but always the same spirit. And it's like a cycle of learning. You'll come down to learn a certain set agenda of things, and you'll get through so many of those in the lifetime, but at the same time you might accrue karma during that life, so you will come back again and you'll carry on going through your ticky off list to see what you can get done, as well as address any karma, etc., that you've accrued.
And do you think you've got free will to sort of do what you want in this life?
Yeah, I think everybody's got free will, definitely. How we use it is another story. But, every decision that we make is down to us. We can either take something or leave it. It's definitely our decision.
Do you believe in wrong and rights? As in the sense of, do you think that when we pass on, for example, what would be classed as wrong or right on this level, do you think it means the same as when it does when we've moved on to somewhere else?
I think you'll take a slightly different approach to it, because I think that everything is an experience, everything is a learning experience. So whether what we consider to be right or wrong in this life, you can actually just look at it as a chance to learn something and to grow. We do tend to judge a lot in this life, but really everything is a chance at learning.
Michael, we mentioned the word sort of unity and oneness earlier on as well. So what would oneness, how would you describe oneness, and what would it solve?
I would describe oneness as the source. The source is the energy from which all else exists, which some religions would call God. Every person, every living thing, every atom is a reflection of the source. And I think if people lived just remembering that we are all connected, moving on from karma, it's not seen as a punishment, it's seen as a cause and effect. You caused it, you must own it, and you must deal with it. So it's not seen as a punishment, but that's how I would describe the oneness. Everything is connected. What one person does has an effect on someone else. What we do on this planet has an effect on other planets in the solar system.
Right, okay, so our energy affects our other sort of races out there, is that what you're saying?
Yes, energy is everything. Everything is made up of energy. When you see crop circles, they're spiralled. When you see Milky Ways, they're spiralled. When you look at the fingerprints on your fingers, they're spiralled. That's because cosmic energy is spiralled, and everything is a creation of cosmic energy.
We spoke about other realms as well, briefly. We were not other realms, but we spoke about the spirit world. Just explain some of the other realms for us, for example, some of the ones that you're aware of.
We start with the physical realm, which is Earth. You can then start the seven levels of the astral plane, which are obviously the lower ones are what some people may say are hell-like. The higher levels of the astral plane are what people would call heaven-like. And then you go the buddhic way, which is one higher than the astral. And then you go through to the seventh dimension, which is the angels, up to the ninth dimension, which is the ascended master known as Jesus Christ, and so on. So that there's many, many different dimensions and realms in the same space, effectively.
Okay, so you mentioned Jesus there. I mean, do you believe in Christ?
We believe in Christ. We don't necessarily believe the biblical story of Christ. Christ conscious, cosmically, is known as Sananda, and he works closely with a group called the Galactic Federation of Light. So, yes, we do believe in Christ, but not necessarily the story that he's taught.
Now, I just want to briefly move on to the sort of UFO subjects that you touch in the book. And, what happened to sort of include the UFO topic in your book? What experiences have you had, Sarah?
Well, the first experiences we had together were we were actually walking down a street in Rome one night, and it was dusk. And I noticed what looked like a cloud, which was going in the opposite direction to all the other clouds. So we stopped and watched this object, and it started to perform all kinds of weird manoeuvres. It split into two or three balls of, three or four balls, and were dancing around in the sky, and then came back together. And eventually it sort of it disappeared, and this really opened our minds even more to what was out there, what was around us. From that point on, we experienced several other encounters, one being a big bright orange ball of light. We managed to get a picture of this object, and the picture looked completely different to what we'd actually seen. And we've also seen cylindrical objects, which appeared to be just watching what was going on in the environment. So we've had quite a number of experiences when it comes to UFOs.
Right, and do you think you started seeing these objects when you both got together or prior?
Well, we certainly, I mean, Sarah had seen a few before we got together. I began to see them when we did get together. And there's certain things that we've learned that, you know, there are UFOs of both sides, good and bad, because they're vibrationally different. If we see them, it's because they wanted to be seen. They've actually slowed themselves down vibrationally to come into the available light of our physical eyes. And yes, I think it's just part of our journey. It's just another box, so to speak.
Do you think they're soul brothers, or, you know, part of the oneness?
I think, everything is part of the oneness, without doubt. And yes, some of them may well be sort of family. I'm sure at some point we've come across them before in our lifetime or after lifetime. And there's definitely, they are playing a bigger part in what's going on. As Michael says, that, you know, there are different, different agendas going on with the UFO scenario. And what we've seen, we believe we've seen, some from the nice side and some from the not so nice side.
Would you say, though, Sarah, that perhaps because you've had these spiritual awakenings, as you call them, would you say that's made you more aware to what's around you?
Definitely. When we had the Sarah Jensen experience, when we relived the murder, there was definitely some kind of switch flicked for us, and we started to see all kinds of things. We believe that maybe, you know, something in our brain has been opened and we've been able to access more of what's going on around us within the visible light range.
Okay. Now, again, you don't have any mediumistic skills, do you? Yours is just your awakening of this spiritual journey that you're on.
Yeah, I mean, we've had, you know, kind of what people would describe as psychic experiences, but, we wouldn't class ourselves as mediums or psychics or anything like that.
Now, Michael, what is the some of the close encounters that you've had?
Well, the same one as Sarah, really, the orange ball of light, the cigar-shaped ones over our hometown in the middle of the afternoon, where me and Sarah seemed to be the only people that could see them. We've seen what would appear to be what is described as wormholes and objects appearing at the end of them and just disappearing. We've seen shooting stars that weren't shooting stars. We've looked up at the night sky and seen what looks to be stars, but then they began to move. We've had many, both during the day and during the night.
There's some differences that you mentioned there with the sort of shapes of these alleged UFOs. Are they from different planets? Are they different dimensions? I mean, why are the different shapes? I mean, are they different technologies? I mean, what do you think is going on?
There certainly is different technologies, and there are different shapes. I mean, each race of beings will have its own preference. For argument's sake, you know, EasyJet will have different looking aeroplanes to Virgin, and so on, and I think it's the same cosmically.
And obviously good and bad?
Both sides, yes.
Is there any sort of ones that you can pick out that you may say are quite negative?
Yeah. The cylindrical ones, the cigar-shaped ones, definitely. I mean, they had a really, really eerie feeling to them. They seemed to be just sort of hanging in the sky, and they were very low as well. They were just sort of, you know, within... Well, if anybody else could see them, they would have been in sight of everybody. And they seemed to be just observing, but it didn't feel as if it was a nice kind of observing.
Any sort of markings on the side, or...?
No, not that I can remember. Just very sort of grey, metallic.
Any noise, or...?
Silent, completely silent.
Right, so you knew that it wasn't conventional. It wasn't ours then, basically.
It definitely wasn't ours. I mean, there was three or four of them actually in the sky, and they were all completely stationary. There was no movement, no buzzing, no vibration or anything, just completely still objects.
Do you think you've ever been abducted, either of you, or...?
No, we certainly don't.
No.
Certainly help not.
No, okay. And just briefly then, Michael, what is the Galactic Federation of Light?
The Galactic Federation of Light is a coalition of star nations that have come to Earth firstly to help with what's going on here and to help the ascension of mankind, and to also address problems in their own solar systems that we are creating. The Andromedan race, for argument's sake, they noticed a problem in their own time and space in their future, and they traced that back to our own solar system, so they joined the Galactic Federation to come back and basically rectify a problem in their future.
Right, okay, so time travel involved as well. And how have you got that information?
We get information firstly through channeled messages from the Galactic Federation themselves. They are headed by a Commander Ashtar, who obviously works as closely with Jesus Christ, Sananda. And we also do lots of research into this subject as well, but mainly it comes from the inner knowing and the messages that they give us.
Okay, and are these messages through meditation?
No, some of the messages are from meditation. Some of them just come through as and when. I've even been swimming at a local swimming pool and had sort of channeled messages come through. So it can happen sort of as and when.
Okay, and is that like a voice or is it a vision or...?
I do get visions in my psychic eye of who I'm speaking to. But a lot of the time it's another's words that appear in my head that they're quite obviously not from me.
Right, okay. And I suppose you have to have a lot of faith for yourself, because when you must come against people who may be quite negative sometimes to what you truly believe in or what you truly feel is what you've seen.
The thing is, you know, we know what we've seen, we know what we've experienced, and it doesn't really matter whether people believe it or not. We're not out to try and convince anybody, because everybody has to go through their own journey and learn for themselves. We just like to put that information out there because somebody might pick it up and might be interested and might learn from it. So that's really what we're about. Whether people want to take it or leave it, it doesn't really matter.
No, that's a beautiful thing that you're doing. So basically just to say, look, you know, this has happened to us. The door's open if you want to talk about it.
Yeah, because it's a shame, because so many people go through life and, you know, don't know about this stuff or they don't experience anything. And it's a shame for people to sort of live in fear. So many people live in fear of dying. And, you know, with the experiences that we've had, we know that death is not the end. It's just the beginning of something new.
Or living in fear for thinking differently.
Yeah, living in fear for thinking differently as well.
I mean, would it matter if you were wrong?
Good question. I don't know. I don't know if it would matter. But to me, you know, what we've experienced is not wrong. It's right to us. It might not be right to everybody else, but to us, it's right. And I think everybody has to find their own truth.
Absolutely. But do you think, though, that... I suppose your path is your path, isn't it? And even if it was wrong, you've done what you thought was right and you've lived a good life.
Yeah, I mean, as long as you learn from the experiences that you've come across and that you've had, then I think, you know, either way, you've gone away with something, you've taken something valuable with you, you know, regardless of whether it was right or wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're not here, like you say, to convince anybody.
Definitely
it's,
not.
It's your truth, and it's got to be their truth, and you respect wherever they're coming from.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, everybody's different. If we all have the same experiences and believe the same, it would be a boring place. And there's going to be things that we say that will resonate with people and things that we say that don't resonate with
Absolutely.
People.
Absolutely. And most people who attack you, would you say, Michael, sort of come from fear?
I think they do. I mean, as Sarah was saying, you know, we're all on this journey, but we are at different stages of this journey. And some people have been here many times before, and some people are just in the first couple of incarnations.
Yeah.
And we're all on the same path, but at different stages.
Do you think you've both been here before? Do you both feel that you've had past lives here together?
We certainly do. We certainly believe we've been in ancient Egypt together, and we certainly believe that we've been in the what's called the Lost City of Atlantis together.
Now, crop circles, that's the next thing I want us to move on to. Out of you both, who's had the crop circle experiences and what have they been like?
We've both had the crop circle experiences together because we actually visited them in Wiltshire, which was a birthday present. Some of them are quite obviously hoaxes and some of them are quite obviously not. When flocks of birds fly over certain formations, that they will break their own formation until they've passed and then sort of reform. When you stand in the middle of these crop circles, there's a beautiful warm energy that's going into the Earth's atmosphere. And there's many different sort of messages. Some crop circles represent chakra points, some represent your Earth self and your higher self. The hummingbird, for instance, represents infinity because the hummingbird is the only bird in nature whose wings go into a shape of eight, and the letter eight means infinity. So there's various crop circles put there by different races of beans.
Okay. So, I mean, you know, you touch on the whole variation, don't you, of ufology, because there's quite a bit to it. So, you know, do you ever think, though, that some of these UFOs that you see, do you think they might be reverse engineered from our own technology, or...?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, there's a lot of talk in a lot of places that our governments, you know a lot more than what they're letting on, and that, again, is without doubt. There's a lot of talk, actually, about the London 2012 Olympics. There is supposedly, not definitely, but there's supposedly supposed to be some kind of holographic UFO appearance. It will be some kind of mass show. But at the same time, because the governments, or the secret governments, certainly possess back-engineered technology, UFO technology, that will be used to make this this show even more convincing. There is another reason for that, which is to establish a one-world government, but that's another story.
Okay, so that's to establish control and power. So a false flag operation to say, look, you know, you need your government.
Yeah, definitely. And that's probably another reason why there's so many UFO sightings at the moment. It's as if we're being desensitised to the fact that they do exist, but for all the wrong reasons, unfortunately.
Is it like the saying, when the student's ready, the teacher will appear? As in the sense of the ufology, I mean, you know, they're only going to sort of, if they are out there, you know, they probably view this planet, I would think, maybe a bit of a comedy channel, perhaps.
Yeah, and one thing that we feel is that vibrationally as a human race, we're not quite ready to receive the good guys yet, because they're coming from a place of pure love. And vibrationally, they are very, very high. Now, if they were to just waltz in while we're at the level we're currently at, that wouldn't be a very clever thing to do, I don't think, because vibrationally we're so incompatible that it would probably do more harm than good. So we have to get to a certain level before we can, you know, receive the good guys.
Okay. And would you say that level is what the Mayans talk about in 2012, where there's some sort of, you know, mass conscious shift perhaps taking place?
Yeah, I mean, supposedly it has happened civilizations ago. You know, civilizations have all of a sudden woken up overnight. I'm not necessarily sure that's going to happen, you know, come the 21st of December 2012, but I think that is certainly the aim for some people. I think it's kind of a marker point that people will be at a certain level by the time that comes, and hopefully, you know, they'll reach this point, should they choose it, to take ascension, as it's called.
Okay. Now, ascension, Michael, what is that?
Ascension basically means to ascend, to go up. When people start becoming aware of these subjects and start living this way, then naturally you vibrate much higher. You know, the planet Earth at the moment is 3D, third dimensional, and humankind is aiming for fifth dimensional. And ascension basically means going through the different vibrations to get to where you need to be.
And do you think that's why we keep coming back, because we haven't ascended as such?
As a soul? I think people come back because when you go back upstairs, so to speak, and you have your life's review and you look at what you intended to do and what you've actually done, if there's a gap in between the two, then you normally come back to try and rectify that and to try and do the things that you didn't do last time.
I mean, you just said that when you go upstairs. I mean, but do you think it's a sort of dimensional shift when you pass on? And do you think it, you know, when they say heaven is on earth... Well, perhaps it is.
Yeah, this is something we were talking about recently, actually. That we talk about upstairs, and I think we refer to things in a certain way because it's much easier for everybody to understand and it makes it clearer in our heads. But really, you know, we feel that everything exists in the same space. We all occupy the same space. You know, this dimension, there may be several or even infinite number of other sub-realities, sub-dimensions within the dimension itself. So everything, we believe, is occupying the same space, and it can be accessed at any time if you have the know-how.
I mean, that's a heavy thing to get your head round, isn't it?
Very. we've taken all this time to try and get our head round,
yeah,
but we're not there yet.
Yeah. And Michael, what are the children of the stars?
The children of the stars are basically advanced souls that are incarnating into physical bodies to assist with the ascension of both Earth and mankind. Many of the children that are being born now are from the constellation of Sirius, which is an advanced race. Some of them get called crystal children, and they have certain traits such as telepathy and things like that. And they have striking, sort of big, really big saucer eyes, you can tell there's something different about them. And it's basically they're here to help with the ascension and the shift of the vibrations of mankind.
And would you call these children the Indigo children?
Yeah, they have various names. They have the Indigo children, who were prominently started to be born in the 1970s, which were to take on the system and to carve the way for the Crystal children, who are more advanced and sensitive.
So, okay, so they're here to help, and I suppose they would have chosen that mission?
Yep, certainly. There's many that would have chosen to be here. There's races of beings who were called the Wise Ones, who were actually retired from it all, but have agreed to come back to Earth to help us now.
So this is a very special time, isn't it?
It's an extremely special time. It's an opportunity like no other, and the people who are here today will be fortunate enough to see great changes upon Earth.
Yeah, I mean, is it changes that you thought you'd expect to see in your lifetime?
We never gave it any thought up until a couple of years ago, and I think everything's aiming to a special time, and this time is upon us now.
Right, okay. And there's one thing I wanted to speak about as well, was do you have a sort of open channel to these different races out there? You mentioned that you've sort of tuned into some of them.
Yes, I mean, I channel messages from the angels, from the archangels, occasionally the ascended masters, certainly the Galactic Federation of Light, and different star councils. They just tend to speak when they want to speak, and information and messages come into my head as we're talking there.
In regards to you, when you tune in to these messages, again, is that through meditation or?
No, again, it's normally in a conscious state.
Okay.
You know, messages such as "We're not here to rescue you; we're here to help you to rescue yourselves," and things like that. But these messages can sometimes be a couple of minutes. Sometimes they can fill two pages of a Word document.
Now, you just mentioned about the angels and the archangels. Just go into that in a bit more detail. Then, are these angels and guides and ascended masters? Are they souls that have passed on, or are they more than that?
Some of them have had earthly lives, and they've got to a point where they are able to ascend out of it. They are, although they've all been given individual labels such as angels, archangels, ascended masters, they are basically beings of a higher existence, of a higher vibration. Many of them have chosen to stay close to Earth and work with us to help us to put right what the things that have gone wrong, really, and to help us through our own lives personally. And as we know, we've all got spirit guides, and spirit guides, for the most part, have had lives on Earth. And so normally you will end up with a guide that's had experiences similar to what you're going through so that they can help you through it.
So would you say that when we pass on, we are, light beings, for example?
Well, what we are, all of us, we are infinite consciousness. We are a massive energy of consciousness that is connected to everything else. You know, it cannot be killed. It's always existed, it always will exist. And I think that we work our way up to becoming a being of light. And I imagine that many of the beings that we're talking about here are, you know, have worked to that point.
I mean, that sort of... So, okay, so to work towards that point, in your opinion, you'd have had to have many past lives and to keep coming back, would you?
Yeah, I would imagine so. I mean, there's a lot to learn, there's a lot to overcome on Earth, so, I don't think it can be done in one go. And so you would have to keep coming back time and time again, and hopefully by the time you've sort of gone through your cycle, you will have learned everything you needed to learn, and hopefully you will get to that point.
Yeah, so as light beings, in your opinion then, where have we come from? I mean, if we come into this body and into a human existence previously in past lives, where has our energy come from, or has it always been there?
I think, as Mick says earlier, you know, we've got what we know as the source, which is the energy from which everything else exists, what some people will call God, you know. And we don't see God or the source as some fella sat on a cloud with a big beard, you know, floating around. It's a mass of consciousness, and it can be anything and nothing. And we sort of see it as that every single living being is an aspect of this consciousness, this living consciousness that have been separated from the whole, and it's gone to experience things individually, and we'll sort of bring all that experience back into the pot, and then eventually we will all go back to that central point.
Is that so it may know itself in the end? I mean, this sort of gets very tricky here. I mean, we're talking about this, I suppose, the purpose of life. I mean, in your opinion, what is the purpose of life? I'll give that question to Michael.
I think the purpose of life is a gift, and to learn as many aspects of life as you possibly can in whatever place you need to be, whether that's Earth, whether it's Venus, whether it's Mars or Pluto, you will learn what you need to learn. But it is a gift, and it is to enjoy and to grow.
Yeah. So this is a growth that we wouldn't get where we come from, apparently, it seems to be the case.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem to be very intense here on Earth. Everything we experience seems to be... it seems very intense. So I imagine when we take that back, you know, we are taking a lot with us. We've taken a lot of experience with us that maybe you can't experience when you don't have a physical body.
So I suppose the ancient times, I suppose, you know, going back centuries upon centuries. Do you think they knew more about the truth that we're talking about, or should I say your truth that you're talking about, than we do now? Do you think, you know, the past understood it better?
They certainly seem to have, yeah. I mean, you look at the Mayans and they seem very advanced for, you know, for their time. And again, the ancient Egyptians, you know, there's technology and stuff being used there that we haven't got today. You know, the pyramids, for example, we can't build that today with the technology we have. They were a lot more spiritually aware than we are now. And as we sort of touched upon earlier, you know, there is this the other side to what's going on, and there is those that are in control have dumbed down this information over time. They've taken it from us. Either we've not been responsible enough to keep hold of it, but also, you know, it has been taken away over time, and there is a reason for that. But it does seem to be starting to come about again now.
I mean, it's funny, isn't it? All these very powerful cultures, you know, from the Egyptian cultures to the Mayan, they just kind of seemed to disappear, didn't they? I mean, have you done much work into the ancient wonders of Egypt, Michael?
We certainly have. We visited the pyramids, and when we were there, we were given lots and lots of information about what the pyramids were actually for. And it wasn't to do with the burial of the pharaohs; it was to do with the Christ consciousness ascension of mankind. And we were shown dimensional gates underneath the centre pyramid and the Sphinx, which the centre pyramid actually is in direct alignment with the centre star of the Orion's belt, which is one of 13 stargates in our universe, and all of it is aligned and sort of a circuitry.
So, okay, then where do races like the Mayans disappear to? I mean, do they just ascend or something? I mean, you know, are they just transferred to another dimension, or what? What's your work told you?
Yeah, we haven't looked into that a great deal, but what from the little research that we have done, it does seem that the general consensus is that you know, the Mayan race in particular reached such a level that they did just ascend and transcended to another dimension. That's what most people seem to think. It's possible.
You mentioned before as well that we're light, and we're sort of getting to the top of the hour now. And one thing I wanted to get to is your work on the idea of love. Now, you say in your books that love is all there is, and it's the answer to everything. So are you saying that if we just came from love a lot more on all our problems, war wouldn't exist?
Absolutely. Love is the highest vibration and the purest form in the universe, or certainly in this universe and every other universe. You know, it means the level of vibrational energy, and it's the right end of the scale, so to speak.
Do you think, though, Michael, that one of the main problems on this level, as we are now, that we actually don't love ourselves, and that's one of the key issues which we come down here to do, is to learn to love ourselves?
I think it is, and I think that, you know, society in general is stacked against us. I mean, you have teenage girls that have to look like fashion models, you have teenage boys that have to look like, you know, pop idols. We are given an image of how we should look, and it gives us a sense of self-worthlessness. We are all brilliant, fantastic beings of light. We are infinite consciousness. We are all possibility. And any system that tells us otherwise is wrong.
Again, you mentioned to me in my television interview, because you're coming on my TV show, you mentioned what you think love stood for?
Yeah, it stands for the level of vibrational energy. Love and hate are on the same scale, but it's just different variants of the same scale.
Yeah. So, I suppose then, this all comes down to, we should forgive ourselves, shouldn't we? If we've done something wrong that we feel quite negative about, then would you say that we should not focus on what we've done, but just to sort of say, you know, I forgive myself and I forgive others?
I think so. I think we need to learn from our mistakes. We all make them. We'll all continue to make them. And we don't get judged by the higher realms. They see us as, you know, we are at that particular standard at this time. This is the level that we've reached on our journey. We concern ourselves too much with what others think of us, and we should, I think, get rid of any self-judgment and just see ourselves for what we really are, which is fantastic individuals.
Yeah, yeah. And, just not focus so much on the fear and as much, and choose the love, would you say?
Yeah, I think fear is a low vibrational energy that actually keeps you in more fear. And when you start to realise that there's nothing to fear but fear itself, you know, you can actually ascend from that and look at it through different eyes. There is nothing to fear. Everyone is going to better places when we finish here, and there really isn't nothing to be scared of.
Now, you've both worked on healing, and I suppose that's what we're talking about, you know, healing ourselves. Where's your work took you on healing?
Healing for me started out with a calling to learn Reiki, which is an energy healing, and that's where we started to learn about the different energies, the different realms of existence, the other beings that exist. We did do a little bit of healing, hands-on healing, which was, you know, quite an eye-opening experience. It's not primarily where we're going, I don't think. Definitely not for both of us. But it's served a purpose. It's got us realising that everything is made up of energy, and that energy can be affected and changed and used for, both good and bad. So it's been a very eye-opening experience to come across that.
You know, it's funny, isn't it? We talk about healing, but again, you know, a major part of life is sort of getting over when someone's passed on. And where do we go when we pass on?
I think when it's our time to pass on, you will go to a place that is vibrationally suitable to you, that you can resonate with. You've got to be vibrationally compatible with the level that you go to. And I think the way that works is the amount of work you've done now while you're alive, and the amount of right decisions you've made, and even the wrong decisions that you've made, but you've learned from, you've been a good person. Generally, I think you will go to a nice level that is vibrationally compatible, and you can, again, reality is what you make. You can make your own reality. Many would say we are actually now creating our place in the hereafter.
Would you say that you create your life as you want it to be?
Today, as in now, with where I am at the moment. Yeah, I think so. And the more and more you go with your intuition and go with your heart, you definitely get guided to a place that's right for you. And that's definitely where we're at the moment.
Do you find it scary, though, going with your intuition, going with your gut feeling?
Sometimes, yeah, because sometimes you're faced with a major decision, like, you know, the decision to leave our secure jobs in the police force. Although my heart was telling me, you know, it's the right thing to do, the head was saying, you want to be careful with this. This is not good. What you're going to do, and putting all the obstacles in front of it. But it was a challenging decision. But when we took the leap, it's led us to where we are now, and we haven't looked back, and we don't regret it one bit.
That's a very, very brave decision, and I think it's a hard thing to do, isn't it, Michael? It's not easy, is it? Going with this emotional processing, is it?
It's not. It's something we're not used to. As Sarah just said, you know, your head kicks in and rationale kicks in, and you get all these obstacles telling you what you shouldn't do.
But do you think you need some logic sometimes?
I think you do. I think, you know, you have your head for a reason. You have your heart for a reason. And I think the crux of the matter is trying to get both of them balanced to make the same decision.
But will your head ever give you the happiness that you deserve?
I think it can do if you have a certain amount of inner peace, and you respect the head and the decisions that it gives you, because it's there for a reason. And sometimes it it's a grounder. You know, it can sort of stop you going into situations that you may not want to be in.
Okay, so where's this work going to take you, do you think?
I don't know. I really don't know. Every day is different. Every day we wake up and something new happens. At the moment, we're venturing out into talking about our experiences. There may be a few more books in the pipeline, we don't know. But literally, we live our lives in the now, so we get up every day and we just see what opportunities present themselves. So,
you know where we're going to be. I do a few shows on 2012. Well, I have done a few shows on 2012. And you two represent the conscious shift that everyone keeps talking about. You know, I'm actually sat in front of you both now, and you are what they're all talking about. Do you feel that it's happened at this particular time for a reason?
I think everything's perfectly timed. You know, it may be a possibility of that if we'd have woken up years and years and years ago, by the time we'd have got to this period, we might have got bored, I don't know, and forgotten about everything that we'd learned. The fact that we woke up when we did and woke up together as well at the same time really added some strength to where we are now. And it's great to have been able to go through it all together, because it would have been a very difficult journey, I think, had we done it as individuals.
Okay, now, Michael, how would you like to conclude this interview to the audience?
I would like to conclude by saying, never be scared, never be fearful. Get informed about what's really, really going on, and be comforted by the fact that you are here for a wonderful experience, and make the most of it, enjoy each day. And as Archangel Michael says to me once, enjoy your time here, because you have an eternity to be elsewhere.
Okay, and Sarah?
I would just echo what Mick says. You know, I think if people stop living life in fear, then a lot more opportunities will present themselves and people will be happier.
Well, Michael and Sarah Freely, thank you so much for joining us today. Now, if you'd like to find out more on our guests, just go to walkintothelight.co.uk or visit my site, themoreshow.co.uk, and look them up under past guests. Now, don't forget we have a TV show which starts on Sky 201 on Friday at 6 p.m. and FreeSat 403, and you can also follow us on Facebook. So until next time, thanks for listening.